The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Thursday, the 6th of August, 2020. On the podcast today, Tony Sirichik, CEO of Salt Lake Potash. SO4 is ticker there, and Tony discusses what the full funding of their Lake Way project means for the company and the creation of an industry in Western Australia. Also on the podcast, Stuart Gall, CEO, and Helen Jones, CFO of Intelligent Ultrasound Group, MED, MED is ticker there, and the guys discuss highlights from the interim results and milestones to come. And Nick Lee, Investment Director at Riverfort Global Opportunities, RGO ticker, explains how warrants can significantly increase the return that they are able to achieve from their investments. And Chris Bailey, founder of FinancialOrbit.com, covers dividend news and the following companies, Aviva and Hammerson. Plus, as always, I have two lists for you, the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs too. By the way, you can see top 10 versions of both these lists at voxmarkets.co.uk. We'll all see lots of other content. There's a blog there, an article on Turn. There's one on Avacta Group. There's also one on Intelligent Ultrasound. Plus, you can also check out our COVID-19 index right there. And let's look what the biggest rises are here. Today, Avacta Group up 11% to 143. Biggest fall of the day is Cromec Group, down 5% to 14 pence. That's voxmarkets.co.uk.
Vox Markets is an online community of investors that runs a free mobile and desktop platform that allows you to track news and updates about any UK-listed company, offering RNS push notifications, detailed charts, pricing data, and much more. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Tony Sirichik, Chief Executive Officer of Salt Lake Potash. SO4 is the ticker there. Tony, thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me back, Justin.
Now, massive milestone yesterday, and I thought this was the last sort of part of the puzzle that people were waiting for. It was the debt funding. You also did an equity raising, but it means now Lake Way, your first project, is fully funded, going into production Q1 next year, March next year, and we'll discuss that. But before we go into that, I want to discuss the broader ambition here. So I don't think a lot of people get this, and I was reading the release, and especially the guys from the debt funders, Taurus Chief Investment Officer Mike Davis and Ian Learmouth from Clean Energy Finance, who are part of the debt funding, and they both mentioned there that you are creating a low cost and sustainable industry, you know, an industry, not just a project, not a one-off project. And I want to hear sort of your ambitions, because I saw your video recently, and you say within 5 years you want to achieve something. But take us through, when they say industry, because I think a lot of people are missing the point here. What is your ambition here, Tony?
Well, Justin, look, I've been very open, you know, and I joined this company at the end of 2018. I didn't come on board to just build one project, Lake Way. You know, this is a company that has 9 mine sites in its portfolio that's very regionalised in the northern goldfields of Western Australia. And the vision from the outset has always been a multi-lake, namely three mines, 3 lakes in 5 years to provide north of 1 million tonnes of SOP into that global market demand that is growing every year, an average 3% compound average growth rate out there in the market. And some segments of SOP are growing at 8 to 10%, the water-soluble fertigation. So it's extremely hungry, and that's why we're here. And, you know, the news we're about to talk about later really, really leaps us forward in that vision. You know, we'll get this lake way up and running in the next 7-8 months, and then we'll be motoring on when the balance sheet allows. Probably in the next 12 to 18 months, well and truly into that second lake project. So look, in terms of industry, I mean, there are other proponents in WA as well in Western Australia, and some with fantastic deposits and some very well advanced, namely one. And, you know, always are offering support to that other company and other peers that we want to see them, you know, successful as well. So we do create that new investable industry sector and are known globally around the world as WA, the place where premium sulfate of potash comes from.
Yeah. And just from an investor's point of view, looking at that, like you say, within 5 years, 3 lakes, a north of 1 million tons there of SOP. And I'm looking at your current lake way, and you can sort of extrapolate, I suppose. So you want to do 245 there. So that's 4 times that. And the EBITDA on this project is 111 Aussie dollars, which is about 60 million. So you're almost talking about, what, four times that, 240 million of EBITDA a year on 1,000. So even if you look at, 10 times valuation, that's 2.4 billion. If it, five times, 1.2 billion. So you're looking at creating a billion pound market cap, can be in excess of that within 5 years. Is that, would that be about right?
That, look, everyone can do their own valuations, and that mathematics you just went through then is pretty good. I mean, that's what we've modelled, and that is what the vision, you know, is focused on. Mm. You know, that's where we want to be in 5 years' time, correct?
Yeah, yeah. Okay, well, let's go through this, because I know a couple of people saying, oh, I don't know if they get debt funding and all that stuff, because there's people in the UK got burned on Sirius. I don't know, I wasn't really over Sirius too much, but you got debt funding there. And of course, part of it came from the Clean Energy Finance Corporation, which is very telling, I think, of course. So take us through what this means now. And also, you did the equity raise, which is fully underwritten and is an offer in there for existing shareholders. Why the equity raise as well, though, Tony, there?
Yeah, look, first of all, I'll start with the syndicate that's coming to provide the debt. That is Taurus, correct? And they've also, we've brought in the Clean Energy Finance Corporation, which is a government, Australian government, federal government, $10 billion fund that is there to support and sponsor clean and green projects. So they loved this project, the salt water, sunshine, you know, fertilizer to feed people, thematic, and it's fantastic. And we're very happy to have them on board. It's very powerful. Message out there in terms of our clean green thematic. Look, so we had that debt piece put together. We worked very hard in the modelling of that debt piece with those two other parties, the two funders. And obviously, you know, the total uses of those sources, you know, were modelled with, you know, the capital required to build the project, you know, the corporate expenses required, the operating expenses required to run Lake Way for obviously the next 9 to 10 months, because we are running an operation. We are in a mining operation up there with bores and trenches and ponds, so that's got to be funded. Yeah. And then, of course, there's the financing costs and the debt costs go across that. And that's the entire uses of the funds. So that's why the number is up there at that 300 million Aussie dollars. It all adds up. And look, so 200 million Aussie dollars of that is that debt piece. And then we had the optionality of exploring royalties, which we took right to the last minute. And only probably about a week and a half ago, the board decided against that and we stepped away to pursue straight vanilla equity. And the reason we did that was the syndication of that royalty coming in with that that debt party was really tightening us up. It was really winding us up, and to the point where we would risk not pursuing that vision I just spoke about earlier in the time we wanted to pursue it. Yeah. And you know, so focused are we on that vision that we elected to go with a much cleaner vanilla capital structure that will be easier to refinance when the time is right, and lets us move forward now. And the market has fully supported that. Most of the investors are very happy that it's a very clean structure with debt and equity, and not so wound up with something like a royalty or a convertible note that could be in there as well. So and it's been fully supported. So as you've seen, it's fully underwritten, that equity piece. Yeah. So we're away, fully funded.
Yeah, yeah. And I suppose, you know, like I said, the first project, am I right in thinking the first project is always going to be the hardest, because, you know, you're starting from zero, from scratch. You know, you have to start laying infrastructure there, all the kind of stuff that's involved, so much man hours involved there, but from equipment to financing. But once this is out the way, it's almost like a template and you learn from it.
That's correct. So this project, this lake, this first lake, was always going to be the hardest. I mean, the hardest to finance, the hardest to construct. And, you know, we're very comfortable in the construction space now with trenches and bores and ponds that we've been doing now for circa 14, 15 months, commercial operation. Myself and the team have built plants and commissioned plants before, and this is a very simple one, and we're well underway there. And the total project's over 52% complete, total project now, today as we sit here. So look, yeah, no, we're pushing through that, and the financing, we've knocked that over now as well, albeit it's been a pretty grueling few months to get there, but they're out of the way, and as they say, the hardest is behind us now.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And like I said, you'll start ramping up around March next year, and then when do you expect to be sort of you know, cash flow positive on this project?
In the June quarter, so it's pretty quick. You know, we're still guiding. We will be commencing area commissioning in that in the end of December this year. Still focused on that sort of January, early February to walk through dry and wet commissioning and introduce ore into the plant in that second half of February. So we walk into March producing SOP and first sales targeted in that month. And then we will be well and truly in free cash flow or cash flow positive by June. next year.
Wow. And so you've got pretty much offtakes. Is it 225 kilotons, is that right?
224, just to make a bit of a tongue twister. 224,000 tonnes, 92%. We've come out in our release yesterday, and we've publicly now introduced a sixth off-taker. So we've redistributed the portfolio a little bit to make room for WeGrow, Keytrade. So WeGrow is a subsidiary of Keytrade, a giant fertiliser distributor globally. And they've come in there, and we've just moved the tonnes around a little bit, and just allows us to further, I suppose, de-risk that. So we've got six off-takers, full long dock bound, under volume take or pay, floor prices in contracts now for 92% or 224,000 tonnes of product.
Yeah, wow. And the financing package, it can be used, there's no restrictions after 18 months, and you can use it for other projects as well, looking around for future lakes. Is that right?
Well, that's on the refinance. So yeah, that was a negotiated outcome. We can refinance immediately, but it's a make good on those parties. And basically, it walks down to a full make good now to a zero at 18 months from signing. So over that period, you know, if it makes sense to go earlier, we could. I don't think it will. You know, it's going to take us a bit of time, or 7 months to get this project producing premium SOP. It'll take us a few months to prove steady state, and then it'll take us a good few months to get a nice debt refinance package together. So if you add that up, it's sort of that circa 18-month window.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And like I said, within 5 years, if you want to do that, you know, million tons, you're going to be looking at other lakes quite soonish, I suppose. But when do you start, you know, surveying other lakes and looking at the potential there?
We have already. So we're doing desktop trade-off studies now on the next two possible lakes, looking in depth at Lake Ballard and Lake Marmion, which is the southern two lakes in the portfolio. We refer to them as one. They've got basically a land bridge between them, which is, you know, luckily it has a highway, a gas line and a railway on that narrow land bridge between the lakes. So incredible infrastructure support. And the other one is Lake Wells up to the north and the east, over to the east from Lake Way. So we've done a lot of work on Lake Wells, many years of technical work and on-site sort of experimentation and trial. So we know a lot about that. There's scoping studies that are public on Lake Wells. And as I said, the Ballard-Marmion studies we're doing now and the desktop trade-off comparison is being done now over the next couple of months. So into next year, we're guiding sort of that sort of quarter two next calendar year. We'll come out, you know, with studies commenced to make the announcement on the second project.
Wow. And one thing I read with interest, part of the clean energy financing package, there's a solar facility. Can you explain that?
Yeah, sure. That was a commitment that we agreed to with Clean Energy. They are obviously pushing the renewable energy space very hard. And look, we have proposals from third party providers for build, own, operate, transfer, which means we don't pay for it. Someone else pays for that. And we just pay a tariff or a unit cost for them to supply power. Very common here in the mining industry in Australia. And we will commence with a gas, because the gas line is beside the lake, a gas and diesel hybrid power station. And over the first couple of years of operations, we have to transfer to a solar and gas hybrid power station. So we've committed to that. And it's a 5 megawatt solar provision with a 2 megawatt battery to support that at this stage. So certainly the 5 megawatt power will be a minimum, and I don't mind stepping that up. And the battery's obviously dependent on technology as it rolls out over the next couple of years. And the proposals that we have, it is cheaper electricity. And that's why we see a lot of the mines moving to the solar and gas hybrid. It's cheaper than the gas diesel that we're coming on with. So it's a benefit economically as well.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Okay, and so now between, you know, it's you've got all the major, you know, hurdles overcome pretty much for Lake Way. So what's the next sort of big milestone you're hoping to achieve here at Lake Way?
Look, I mean, if you go right to the macro level, it's commissioning. That's it. That's about 5 months away. For me, here down, I look in the weeds a little bit. You know, we will have first structural steel standing up in the plant proper within the next 2 to 3 weeks. We've got all the major kit arriving on site. I mean, the crystallizer is already there on site. 8 truckloads came in on convoy today under police escort. That's the final bits of kit coming in for the crystallizer. That's the $15 million Chinese built Veolia designed big kit in the plant, the big pumps and tanks. But over September, October, we've got all of the long lead items pouring into site, screens, attritioners, you know, dryers, the list goes on. Then we will be looking at, into the harvesting of salts in around November this year. And then, as I said, commissioning starts in December and the lion's share of commissioning in January. And then we move into ore introduction and SOP production late February.
Excellent stuff. Okay, Tony, let's have the tease. You know, three reasons why someone should hit that follow button on your page on Vox and add Salt Lake Potash to their watch list, please.
Absolutely, Justin. Love this. The three T's. The first one's thematics. So, look, it's got beautiful tailwind thematics, the clean, green, the salt water, sunshine, fertilizer to feed people. You know, the growing population, you know, need to be fed. You've got urbanization and sort of shifting middle classes and improving wealth in middle classes. And with that comes in improving diets or increasing demands in diets. You know, and that's where all of this, you know, the fruits, the berries, the nuts, the citrus, the wine, all the fancy stuff that demand sulfate of potash fertilizer. So some fantastic tailwind thematics really supporting this project. The second T is technicals. You know, this Lake Way First project is a fast-track program schedule and very well supported by infrastructure. You know, a gas line beside the lake, a highway beside the lake, and an airstrip for the township on the northern edge of the lake. You know, technically, it's very strong in grades. Financial economics modeled are very, very strong. So technically, it's got this beautiful wraparound. That's the second T. And the third T is team. I've got an incredible team of people that have amassed thousands and thousands of years of construction, you know, commissioning, ramp up and operations experience here with me. It's certainly a team that I would never envisage, you know, being in a company of a market cap our size. And it's a team that's built with me before, you know, many operations and many projects. We've optimized many projects and we're here to do this one again. Yeah. So they're the three T's, Justin. Thematics, yeah. Technicals and team.
Yeah, absolutely. It's worth mentioning, there are people listening who are not aware of your previous company, but Fortescue, just explain, you know, how long you were there for, what you did, and the size of that company, because it's quite significant, isn't it, now? And it grew a lot when you were there.
Yeah, that's Fortescue Metals Group. I joined in 2009 and spent nearly a decade there. And, you know, it was an incredible journey. You know, we grew that company to basically three iron ore mines from, I think it was about 25 million tonnes of iron ore a year when I started. We grew it to 170 million tonnes of iron ore, fourth largest iron ore producer exporter in the world, third largest in Australia. I think, you know, it was a $3-4 billion market cap company when I started. You know, today it's at $54 billion market cap, fantastic journey. It's, you know, it was an incredible company to work for, and it's doing great things today. Yeah. And really, it's the playbook copy. I very openly said I want to take all the good things I learned there and 2.0 copy them. Same playbook here.
Yeah, excellent stuff. Tony, good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll catch up in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Thanks for having me again.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now, Stuart Gall, CEO, and Helen Jones, CFO of Intelligent Ultrasound Group. That's MED, Med ticker. Guys, thanks for joining me.
Thank you.
Good morning.
Morning, morning. Now, you've had your results out, and we'll dig into that half-year report, of course, and we'll dig into that because it's been somewhat of an event-filled 6 months, I feel, for the entire global, you know, community, not just for companies, but so be interested to see what's happened in the last 6 months for you guys. We'll dig into that. Before we do, as always, if someone's listening right now is not quite familiar with the company, Intelligent Ultrasound, can you summarise, Stuart, what's all about, please?
I can, thank you. We're an ultrasound software and simulation company. We develop artificial intelligence-based clinical image analysis software tools and advanced high-fidelity haptic and mannequin-based training simulators, and we sell these to medical practitioners around the world.
Wow, so very hot sector, sort of, you know, med tech, and we'll dig into the operations a bit. First of all, Helen, financial results for the 6 months to the 30th of June. Take us through them, please, if you could.
No problem. So I guess in summary, it has been a difficult period for the company, as it has for so many companies this year, in particular for our simulation division with hospitals and university access, you know, limited and our marketing channels disrupted. However, despite this, we have managed to generate revenue of 2.5 million, limiting that decrease to only 20% compared to this time last year. And we've managed to put in place some cost control measures to successfully limit our overall impact on the EBITDA loss. So we've ended up with a 1.2 million loss in the 6 months compared to 1.3 million loss this time last year. Earlier in the year, in May, we did a successful share placing. We raised £5.2 million gross, in May, which means that we've got a very robust cash position at the end of 30th of June of 10.1 million. So we're, you know, really encouraged with that strong, robust position.
Yeah. Well, considering, you know, you're not in, you know, you're not actually involved in COVID-19 in some way, you know, and you are thought to be more disrupted. But like I said, it's quite encouraging. You've taken a small knock. By look, it's relative, I suppose, but and your cash of 10 million, which is a third of your valuation, you know, it's keeps you in good, strong stead, I suppose. The balance sheet is very strong, it looks good
so
going
overall,
forward.
It is relative, but you know, we are pleased with our financial performance in what is, you know, very unusual circumstances.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so last 6 months, operationally, then, Stuart, what's some of the highlights?
Okay, so as hopefully listeners know, we've got two parts of the business. Mm-hmm. We have our clinical AI software business, and then we have our simulation business. So if you look at the clinical AI software side, that's clearly a very exciting space to be in. We signed a deal last year with one of the world's leading ultrasound manufacturers. We've spent the last 12 months, in reality, doing everything possible to bring that product to market. Although everything at the moment is currently undisclosed, we are on track with that. We said to the market at the beginning of the year that we expected to get revenues at the beginning of 2021, and we remain on track. So that's all very positive in terms of our first agreement we signed. What has been quite exciting over the last 6 months has been how much we've moved on our second and third product ranges. So we have a product called Scan Nav Anatomy Guide, which is all about peripheral nerve block and providing the doctors with a software tool that highlights key parts of the anatomy as they're scanning in real time. That product has two routes to market. We have, in effect, a black box that you can bolt onto the side of any existing ultrasound machine and provide this automated highlighting service. The first product went into CE filing on the 24th of July, and we hope to have that product approved in 2022 for sale in the second half of 2022. So very, I guess, important moves forward in terms of product delivery on that second platform. We're also in discussions with commercial OEMs as well about having that product integrated on software after that. So that was the second product platform. And then our third product platform, which we announced when we did our fundraising, was that we were going to be building product that would enable when doctors are scanning to highlight areas of concern in COVID-19 and lung. And we've done our first proof of concept models on that. Clearly this is something that's very topical at the moment. It's quite a competitive space, but if we can keep accelerating that development, and also then we have, you know, regulatory approval, hopefully for something like that would be accelerated, there is the potential to get a product in the COVID-19 space, specifically for ultrasound, into market in 2021. So there's quite a lot of clinical AI development work going on, and I think we've managed to, under difficult circumstances of everyone having to work from home and having everything being disrupted by COVID, we have still kept that development going, and we're on track with all the areas that we said we would deliver on in the first half of the year. In terms of our simulation division, so I think, again, Helen's touched on what's happened with revenue, but actually when you look at the fact that we haven't been able to get into hospitals, I think only having sales reduced by 20% shows just how well the team has worked under very difficult circumstances. We actually were responsible for training, using our ultrasound simulators to train all the frontline clinicians at the Nightingale Hospital in London, and also in New York, the VA Harbour Healthcare Department was training hundreds of frontline clinicians how to do ultrasound scanning for COVID using our Bodyworks Eve COVID-19 training simulator. And we had very good sales in the UK in the first half of the year. We almost doubled our sales, and we hope that bodes well for the second half of the year in 2022, in that having these COVID-specific simulators will help mitigate the impact on COVID's having on general sales within the hospital sector. So we say remain relatively positive about how our simulator sales are going based on our range of three products that we sell. But we're also now working for the second half of the year on two new simulator products that will expand our simulator range up to five products for 2022. And we think that again bodes very well for the simulation division in the longer term.
Yeah, yeah. And as far as, like you say, you know, everyone was sort of frozen out if you weren't involved with COVID-19, pretty much. Is that sort of thawing now? You managing to get back into hospitals? What's happening there?
Well, I think, Donuts, like everyone, it's all a bit varied. Different regions are having ups and downs. So one minute everything's being relaxed, then the next minute it's all locking down again. That makes it quite difficult to plan. So what we're doing is we're trying to... our normal way of selling into hospitals is you have to go in and make physical face-to-face presentations. You get lead generation from going to big trade exhibitions. Well, that's quite difficult at the moment, so we're doing a lot more online demonstrations. And at the moment, that is working okay. It's clearly not the normal way of doing things, but we're managing. And I think that's the most important thing, is that everything we've done at the moment as a business is about managing to make sure we continue to trade whilst we then accelerate development of all our AI products, so that for 2021, we've got a lot more products revenue lines coming on stream, which should bode well for the future of the company.
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah. And like I said, you must feel, you know, quite confident now, having, a decent amount of cash there, and the fact that you've weathered the storm, which is a storm that we've not seen in generations and probably won't see again, you must feel quite confident in that.
Well, I think that was a really important it was very important that we did that in the first half of the year. We talked to our shareholders. They were all very important. We got both new and existing shareholders to invest. We raised 5.2 million in April, May, and that's given us an effective cash balance now of just over 10 million. And from our perspective, that gives us a confidence that when you look at the sort of growing ultrasound simulator product range that we've got and the potential future revenue streams from the AI, that enables us to feel, you know, confident that we're going to be able to reach that profitability inflection point with the current cash that we have. And that's even in the current scenarios of COVID impacting and restricting how we work. You know, we are doing things like in the COVID world, you've got to be very flexible. So you've got to have the ability to work either very remotely, remote work flexibly, be able to change those conditions, at very short notice. And in fact, that's what we've done with the business. We've actually expanded out of the Cardiff office, opened a new warehouse facility in Caerphilly, which has enabled us to be able to, for the future, be able to sell all our simulators, build our simulators, sell our simulators from this site, as well as the potential new AI black box products for peripheral nerve blocks. So we think we're pretty well set as we stand. I mean, I think in this world at the moment, you've got to be always looking at what are the downsides, where can things go wrong, and that's what we're constantly assessing.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Okay. Well, as always, I'd like to highlight, if you could, on the podcast every day, I highlight the top five most followed companies. And to get on that list, people have to hit that follow button on your page. So if someone's listening right now, Stuart likes the sound of what you're doing here, but are not yet following the story, just give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button and add you to their watch list, please.
Okay, well, I think we're well placed with our COVID-related simulator products for making those sales in the second half of this year and 2022. We've got a really exciting range of AI software products that we're developing now, and we'll first those products develop, giving us revenue in the beginning of 2021, importantly. And then finally, we've got cash of 10.1 million because we had that funding in April, May, and that enables to be confident that actually this cash is going to get us to profitability, which I think is very important for any company in the current environment.
Absolutely. Marvellous stuff. Helen Stewart, thanks for coming on the podcast, and hopefully we'll catch up in the not-too-distant future. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Nick Lee, Investment Director at Riverfort Global Opportunities. RGO is ticker there. Nick, thanks for joining me.
Yeah, great to be here, Justin.
Now, I'm going to discuss warrant updates because it can be quite significant and, like I say, almost a risk-free investment. Before we get into that, Nick, just, you know, if people are not familiar with Riverfort, explain the business model, if you could.
Yeah, so what we really do is we investment company listed on AIM, and our principal strategy is really the provision of sort of funding and investing in small listed companies. And we tend to do it with a debt type wrapper, so that we make interest and fees, but also we've got downside protection because of the structure of the investment. So that's broadly what our business is, and we pretty much look at across sector, although historically we've done quite a lot in the natural resources space, but there are a number of sectors that we can provide funding to companies in.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Okay, and take us through this warrant update then.
Yeah, so I think it just makes sense so that, you know, as part of our strategy when we make our investments, we will get a sort of warrant package associated with that particular funding. And, you know, that's quite interesting, particularly given current market volatility and, you know, the way share prices have been sort of increasing in terms of some of the companies within our portfolio. This warrant portfolio can actually be worth quite a lot of money. And so, you know, it is, as you said earlier, it is very much, equity upside with no downside equity risk. And, you know, the returns can be quite significant. So, you know, a good example would be a realization we did on the warrants we held in a company called EQTech the other day. Mm-hmm. You know, that generated us, you know, north of £90,000, and you know, that's quite material in our P&L.
Yeah, yeah. And it says here you have warrants now at the moment, what, in 23 different companies?
Yeah, so, you know, we built them up over a period, and you know, because of the, and if you look at some of the companies that are in that portfolio, so Canadian Overseas is one example, Tanzanian Gold is another one. You know, the share prices have been doing pretty well, and so, you know, that means that a number of our positions are actually currently in the money.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Oh, cool. And how is business at the moment? Yeah.
Well, we haven't sort of put our interims out yet, but you know, the first quarter we sort of sat on our cash for a little bit because, you know, nobody quite knew what was happening with COVID-19, so we wanted to be prudent. And since then we've been very, very active, and you know, there's been pretty good demand for our funding.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Marvellous stuff. Okay.
You know, and you know, just an example, you know, we did quite a big deal the other day, which was the Tanzanian Gold, which is a $180 million New York listed gold producer. Mm-hmm. That you know, is already producing, wanted to scale up its operations, and so we were involved in providing them with some money to enable them to do that.
And gold, good space to be in at the moment.
Good, yeah, very hot space at the moment. So, you know, a good deal, but also in a really exciting sector.
Yeah, and to be honest, I can't see gold coming back. I mean, it may have a little technical correction, but I mean, I can't see it weakening for a long time, really.
No, I think you're right, Justin. Yes, yeah, so we're very, very pleased with that investment.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Okay, as always then, Nick, three reasons why someone should add Rivercourt Global Opportunities to the watch list, please. Go for it.
Yeah, so I think I think investing in RGO is a great way for a retail investor to get exposure to junior companies where there's a good degree of upside, but we've got downside protection. That's the key. And, you know, there's a lot of potential within the company. You know, we're very active and, you know, we're profitable. You know, last year we made something like, you know, £600,000 of profit. So, you know, it's a very interesting way to play that junior company space.
Excellent stuff, Nick. Good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll catch up in the not too distant future. Thanks very much.
Excellent. Yeah, thanks, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Chris Bailey, founder of FinancialOrbit.com. You all right, Chris?
Yeah, very well, thanks. Very busy. Oh, my goodness, too many earnings. Bank of England coming up with their thoughts and everything else. All good fun, I guess. Better to be busy than not.
Yeah, how is the... I sneak a peek at FTSE 100, you know, the index and how it's looking generally, but I'm largely in more the small-cap, micro-cap space. But so what has it been like? Has it been quite calm of late, or has it been a bit choppy? What's happened generally in the bigger caps?
Yeah. I think it's been choppy. I mean, FTSE 100 did have a go below 6,000 index points, which is the big old level a few days ago. It's gone back above that level. But yes, choppy would be the word. I mean, the trouble is that you haven't got... If you think what's been driving global indices, it's been this sort of tech plus sort of area. You know, the big tech companies that we all know, but kind of that thematic, you know, which sort of underpins things like cloud and biotech and whatever else. There's not so much of that. There's actually very little of that in the FTSE 100. And so that index has been much more influenced by the financials, where obviously we've seen lots of provisions. The oil and mining companies, where obviously they're a bit more impacted by exogenous issues, oil prices and copper demand and stuff like that. So, yeah, choppy would be the word, I'd say. FTSE is certainly very much a play on the world and not kind of COVID and its sort of beneficiary sort of elements per se.
Yeah. And you, before you came on, you said you've just been on a conference call, Aviva, is it?
That's right. I mean, I thought a bit of excitement because I was trying to work out why Aviva shares were up 6% as we speak, mm-hmm. which is a lot because obviously Aviva is, you know, let's face it, not one of the more interesting, typically FTSE 100 companies. It's a stalwart. It's a big insurance name. No doubt many people listening have got, you know, their home or car insurance or whatever with Aviva. But it's not that exciting. So the 6% up move is kind of striking, particularly as when you look at the numbers, there's nothing stunning in them. You know, profits were down a single digit percent, but they were down and everything else. The reason is because they, you may recall a few weeks ago, they appointed a new CEO, a lady called Amanda Blanc, or Blanc, maybe Blanc. Possibly rather than blank, but anyway, she, I must admit, she's got a good pedigree, good CV, worked for people like Zurich and AXA, so other big kind of pan-European insurance names. She's been on the Aviva board for a while, and they decided to appoint her the CEO. I have to say, she's kicked off the conference call with a 15-minute monologue, which was very, very punchy, essentially saying, look, we've got to do better. And here's what we're going to do. We're going to sell our underperforming businesses and focus on what we're good at. Now, when the market hears something like that, they generally like it, particularly in a kind of a slightly doddery old hat company like Aviva, which has been ripe for this sort of approach for a while. So I have to say, very impressed with her rhetoric. Obviously, she's got to now do the job, and she admitted that herself. It's easy to talk, harder to do. But the market is liking what they're hearing. And the feeling is that, particularly at some of the markets outside of the UK that Aviva is active in across Europe and Asia, some of those more marginal ones are going to be sold off. And you've seen similar strategies by some of the other players. People like Warner Sun Alliance have done something not dissimilar over the years. Or even the Pru, who've kind of split themselves up into their constituent parts a bit more. So I think the market's liking the sound of that. And I have to say, so do I. So I'm an Aviva shareholder. You know, I was attracted by the fact they punched out a decent dividend, and they did look undervalued on a sort of a longer term basis. But you know, you always need a catalyst, and Amanda Blanc appears to be trying to sort of provide one.
Yeah. Do you know what? I've problems focusing. Right? When I get an email, for example, that's say a couple of paragraphs long, then I generally find it hard to get beyond the first paragraph. And now, if it's a couple of only a sentence or two paragraph, if it doesn't catch my attention, then if it's a big chunk of text and it's not broken up, then I really start to sweat and just move away from it. I looked at Aviva there, went to their page, their news page here on Vox, and it's got 5 releases today. And Aviva dividend declaration is one. Then it's got Aviva, you know, H20 half year results, 1 of 4. Oh, no. I'm not doing 1 of 4. I'm not signing that. So when I start to open the first one, I see big chunks. I find it really hard. Just give me bullet points. And I genuinely am put off by companies. You know, they don't make it easy for you to digest the information. They're very hard. Just hear a monologue at the start. Probably sounds a lot better on the conference call because then you can, you know, emit emotion and stuff and intonation. But on a big text like that, it just puts me off from reading it. You know, I don't want to go through it.
I completely agree. And this is sometimes, this is actually the wonderful thing about today's world. There are many terrible things, clearly, and challenging things, but the digital revolution, it has really broken down the barriers for the private investor or the interested investor. And it used to be, you know, when I came into the city too many years ago, information, it was so difficult to get. You had to pay big money for it. It was in, if you were investing overseas, it was in different languages. It took 6 months for the English translation of the annual report to come over, etc., etc. But today, you click your fingers and boom, it's there. And the other thing is that things such as webcasts and presentations, we all absorb information in different ways. And I completely agree. If you'd have read that turgid Aviva text, even I struggled to really extract the key message from the massive amounts of stuff that came out earlier today. But you listen to them, the conference call, and it's like, yeah, I get it. I get the vision. And you're right. Well, we all absorb information in different ways.
Yeah.
But I have to say, on average, webcasts, presentation documents, companies should be, that's their opportunity to really get a message across. Now, obviously some will abuse that, some will make them into sort of really marketing-centered things and then hide the fact that they're losing money and whatever else. But that's why you need a little bit of numbers and a little bit of the sort of the quality stuff and go from there. So yeah, if you're an Aviva shareholder wondering what on earth's going on, listen to the conference call. It's going to be a lot more interesting than piling through the rather lengthy red appeal news statements today. That would be my top tip.
Exactly. Another one before we move on. One more pet hate is when they don't show the percentage gain or loss from 1 year to the next. Here they've got some of the bullet points there. Operating capital generation, 890 million in brackets last year, 780. I understand that, but I just want to see percentage change, and they don't include that percentage change. I'd like to see that. There we are. That's another pet hater. Let's move on. Any other companies with the news of note today?
We've got to talk about Hammerson. Hammerson, obviously, they own the Birmingham Bullring, a bunch of other shopping centres around the country, another retail sort of commercial landlord sort of options and opportunities. Obviously, it's been a tough sector. Went into administration a few weeks back. Hammerson have been struggling like anything. And if I tell you that their price to book at the moment is approximately 0.12, then obviously they're struggling too. That's obvious. What have they announced this morning with their numbers? They've announced a disposal, which was well flagged, and they've announced a money raising as well. Now, to put some numbers on this, Hammerson, I believe the market cap was a little bit under 500 million quid, so it's really fallen off its perch. It's got 3 billion of debt, so that's quite a lot versus the market cap.
Oh, yeah.
Today, they've announced a 300 million quid odd disposal and a 500 million odd quid money raising. So essentially, they're going to be taking, all other things being equal, they'll be taking the debt down from about 3 billion to much closer to 2 billion by raising an amount of money, which is actually bigger than the current market cap. So, they're still remaining very leveraged and very exposed to everything out there. But they have to do it. And at least, unlike Intu, who struggled to get a money raising away because people just thought, my God, this is just so warped. Intu was like two or three times more warped in terms of its debt balance versus its market cap than Hammerson was. At least Hammerson are trying to get a rights issue away. They say big shareholders are going to sign up to it. And obviously, that's their recovery plan, still very geared into everything, but there you go. So that's why their shares, at least today, have stopped falling, because at least there's a plan. But I was pacing through. Hammerson provided a 50-odd page presentation document. And for a bit of fun, I paced through it, and I had to get to page 51 to get what I really wanted to see, which was, get this, the top 20 tenants that they have. Now, let's try and work out if there's a little bit of a bias in Hammerson's sort of rental base. So their top tenants are H&M, Inditex, Next, M&S, Boots, TK Maxx, Dixon's Carphone, Frasers, that's the old Sports Direct, River Island and JD Sports. So it's retail city. It really is. They're just a massive retail landlord, basically. That's the play, in essence. It's, do you believe these guys are going to keep on paying some rent at a decent level or want to have physical stores or not? Frankly, I just don't know. I still observe Hammerson have a huge amount of debt on the balance sheet, even if the money raising gets going. It's a roll the roulette wheel kind of punt, really.
Yeah. But do you know what? The thing that worries me, like I say, is that debt. even without raising, like, total gross proceeds of $825 million, which is almost double than the market has, 425. So it's 400 million more than they might, almost double that. So even with that, they've still got a big chunk of debt still there, haven't they? You know, and you couldn't really do a bigger offer than that, or, you know, issue of equity than that. So, yeah, they're still not out of the sink, really, are they? You know, it's quite worrying, I suppose.
No.
Mm. Okay, all right.
Yes, if you're a shareholder, if you're still a shareholder, you're sort of saying, my goodness, I've probably got to back this, because otherwise, what's the alternative? It's a zero. I'm wiped out. So you've got to, as I say, it is like a roulette wheel at this stage. If you're unfortunately unlucky enough to still be a shareholder, you've probably got to back it on the basis that this is the only plan in town that's going to get you any money. Because otherwise, it will wither to an absolute zero, go into administration, bondholders get all the money first, etc. So I think they'll get it away. Good luck to them. But they're not going to get my cash because it just looks like, just too extreme. You know, there are easier things to be doing than this, in my opinion.
Yeah, absolutely. Marvellous stuff. Now, you were talking about dividends earlier, and you said there's some news out on dividends today. What's happening there?
It's just dividends have been, they're a big thing, and we all know that, you've all seen the stats that, you know, reinvested dividends are the source to great wealth over time in investment portfolios, and a lot of people like income, particularly as they get a little bit older, and let's face it, you're getting no income at the moment from the bond market or cash on the balance in a current account or something like that. So dividends do matter. I thought it was interesting today that quite a few companies were saying they were going to reinstate dividends. Aviva touched on it, but also other names, people like Mondi in the sort of the packaging sector, Aggreko in sort of temporary power and related, both said that dividends were coming back. But by contrast, you had names such as Glencore, the mining company, or ITV, which were much more circumspect in their comments about dividends. So there's still a big dichotomy in the market. But my feeling is, if you're owning a company and they're saying, look, it's been tough, but actually we're confident enough now to bring a dividend back, a bit like a Mondi or a Greco or an Aviva, that's actually a really good sign. There's nothing like a positive signal like the resumption of a dividend flow, because the company's saying, look, we can afford it, it's been tough, but, you know, we can come back to start paying out some income. So watch out for that. I think that is always a good sign. And certainly if I look at something like Mondi shares today, they've responded very well to that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Cool. Excellent stuff. Thanks for that, Chris, and we'll speak to you next week.
Sounds glad to see you then.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five. Vast Resources, up 2.3% to 0.223. At four, Ilika. I had a guy, Dr. Tom, yesterday on the podcast talking about Ilika. IKA a company, non-mover 62 pence. At three, Omega Diagnostics Group, down 4.3% to 56 pence. At two, Cimec Atlantic Energy, down 23% to 14 pence. And at one, Novasight, just down a tad, just less than 1% to 320. Okay, top five most liked RNSs are as follows. At five, Intelligent Ultrasound, half year report. At four, Avacta appoints COVID-19 rapid antigen test manufacturing partner. At three, Turn contract win for device authority. At two, Salt Lake Potash debt facility equity raising and entitlement offer. And at one, Spiderplay drilling program returns highly encouraging results. And that's from Vast Resources, of course, and that's up 2.3% to 0.223 pence. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos appreciado.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.